Folks, if you could kind of grab your seats. We're about ready to get started. And when I say grab your seats, I mean sit down. Okay, if we can have your attention up here, we're about ready to get going, and it's going to move pretty quickly. So, hey, thanks, everybody, for coming. Look at this. This is great.
Great.
Appreciate
Woo-hoo!
It.
Yay for you.
Yeah, yeah. We had actually done this a couple years in a row. The folks at Village Square put this together. And how's this? It's kind of godlike. Are we good? Can everybody hear okay? Pardon me? Turn it up? Really? Because, like, I can hear somebody in Denver. No, we're good? All right. We skipped a year, but we're back. And folks have told us over and over how much they love this. And we're thrilled that you're here tonight. And Liz and I are going to kind of take you through exactly what's going to happen tonight. So your turn.
No, your instruction, can you hear me? Your instruction says, I'm Gary Yordan, whatever you want to say about your greatness.
Yeah, I don't think
you followed that. Well, I don't even think you told them who you were. You assumed that they knew, right?
Yeah, well, okay, I'm Gary Yordan, and apparently I'm loud.
He's great.
Okay.
It's my turn now. I'm Liz Joyner, founder and CEO of the Village Square, and we would like to welcome you to Our Town Fast Forward, all about the newest, greatest, coolest around town. We'd like to thank our presenting program partners, Leadership Tallahassee, KCCI, the Tallahassee Democrat, Leon County, and the City of Tallahassee for being part of what makes this such a unique event. Thank you. Yeah. And a special thank you to our program sponsors, AARP Florida and Bible-Based Church, and to Music Masters and Blake for both audio support and general technological hand-holding, which happens every time. If you'd like to tweet or share on Facebook tonight, and we hope you do, the hashtag is FastForwardTLH.
All of our presenters tonight will be using the Pachachka format. Now, for those of you who don't know what it is, it's actually the interpretation is chit-chat. What it really is super fast dialogue, and it's kind of like running a marathon but taking a taxi instead of running. I mean, it's like really fast. And each person's going to have about 20 seconds with each slide. So if they've got five slides, it's 20 seconds a slide, and they have about that much time to tell you, because when the slide changes, they're off to the next thing. So that's how fast this is going to work. So you're going to get this amazing tour of the community in short bursts. It's up to the folks. Well, I mean, there's really no penalty for going over, except it'll stop making sense. So it'll work, and it's just going to move 90 miles an hour, and I don't know. I think I'm going to go first. This is an idea of what's going to look like, because I'm going to do my one presentation first. So this is mine. Ready? Go. The Tallahassee Soccer Club is now formed. Chris Petley, the communications director at the Leon County School Board, had a dream. And he put together the Tallahassee Soccer Club. And this March, they actually begin to play soccer here in Tallahassee against teams from all around the area. And if you love soccer, this is going to be your new soccer team.
You actually messed it up by not messing it up. You were actually supposed to mess it up. We've got to follow instructions
well,
better
it's
tonight.
Okay. I got a bunch of stuff here. I'll blow it, I'm sure.
So he got it in the 20 seconds. It is really hard to do. The people who are presenting tonight are just amazing sports about coming up and doing this. So let's just like have a ton of fun together. My slides that I have actually talked all the way through, and that's what I always do, is I talk way too long, is at the Village Square, we wanted to tell you about a big national grant project that we are embarking on to share the model of civil discourse, that we've used in Tallahassee here for 12 years. Am I out of slides? I'm almost out of slides. That we've used here in Tallahassee with college campuses across the country. We're calling the project Respect and Rebellion. And we have pilot campuses at Berkeley and BYU and here at FSU, and we're really excited about the project. And I may actually make it in my time, too. Here, grab that. This is actually, I've got a thank you gift for Gary, and I'm pretty sure it's the only reason he came to do this, and I'm a little bit worried that once he has it, he's going to leave. So that's our campus awesome. T-shirt.
Yeah, this is the shirt that they'll be.
Respect and Rebellion. Yeah. So that is, hold it up in the pictures. Yeah, and you can't do this if you're a presenter. So basically, I've run over my time, like way. I'm about 30 seconds over my time. Okay.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
You good?
Mm-hmm.
All right, you're gone. That's how fast it's going to be. So everybody got the rules, every presenter. All right, then good. Let's get going. And you guys, when I call you up, you'll come here. I'll leave. You'll come here. All right, we're going to start with our... Well, wait a minute. Before I do that, Lucky Goat. Wait, I got to tell you what is back over there. Well, Catalina Cafe, we already talked about that. But let me tell you what the folks at Soto put back there. Cold brew brownies with fudge sauce and edible rose petal garnish. Yeah, I know. Dive into that. Yeah, really. Okay. They didn't applaud us, but they applauded the brownie. Okay, we start with Arts and Play. Colette Probst, owner of Colette Originals. This is a very cool story. I love what you've done there. Come tell the folks about it.
Hello. I am Colette Probst from Colette Originals. I am a fine artist who started doing portraits on Facebook about 3 years ago, and they grew into what you're about to see. Art Finder found in 2017 that Tallahassee was ranked number one in original art sales in the country by a landslide. We are also in the age of selfies. So my thought was, let's merge the two. I was in some locals groups for restaurant owners and business owners, and they were saying that they had a problem with advertising and marketing and keeping up with the franchises. But social media was allowing us to advertise for free given the right tools. So we've created murals around town. I've also do graphic design. So this particular situation, the man purchased this dry cleaner 2 years ago, never did the signing, didn't know where to begin. I create his logo and paint it within 18 hours we were done. It was a morning to evening finish job. What I've been doing is going around town and creating murals that their customer will take a selfie with. It'll promote the business, but it's also something that'll be used for marketing with a hashtag. This particular venue was The Hobbit on Park Avenue. It's about knowing your customer base and your clients. She had 9 different alumni for different sports organizations that went to her establishment. She didn't want to leave any of the teams out. But providing 9 teams worth of logos grew her hashtag and reach on social media exponentially. It didn't leave anybody out. Everybody was happy. But now she's got 9 more areas that she's going to be seen in. Osceola was one of the more noticeable ones. It was in front of the UFC weigh-in at the Hobbit on Pensacola Street, and it's also been widely shared around campus. The students love being seen with him as well. She's done something very smart in this one. She's combined these selfies and use of hashtags with discounts on the client's bills at night. So when they order something, they get 10% off. It was important with me as my success grew and my career grew to give back, so I found some other businesses that I could just practice on, and the Junction was one. I started off with a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame theme, because it is a music venue. And then it grew into an opportunity to thank 15 local artists who are also giving back. These are 15 musicians that are listed on the keys on the jukebox. And it was my way of appreciating them for what they're doing for tourism as well. Tourists come to Tallahassee to see murals. They want to see the art that they're buying online. They want to see what Lemoyne is offering. There's a publicly accessible art map offered by COCA that they can go on, and they can map out their trip around Tallahassee if they want to see these things. So it's giving them something to look at. It's putting feet on the street for our local businesses and increasing tourism dollars by doing so. The next project was in March. It was Women Empowerment Month. I sourced this wall on Gaines Street at the garages on Gaines, and I found 6 other women who were equally profound in the arts, musicians, photographers, cooks, dancers, and I had them collaborate with me on the bottom portion of this mural. One of the most memorable things that I've been a part of. Next up, we are doing the soup kitchen on Brevard Street, Grace Mission. I've partnered with Jessica Garrett with Fun for Tally Kids, and I'm getting 50 children to come help me paint the bottom half of that mural while I take the scissor jack part. But it's an opportunity to build humanity and compassion in the kids, also teach them the love of arts, and hopefully a next generation of art lovers and people who are going to run Tallahassee. My hope is to have a mural. This is the soup kitchen before, and I'll have an after next year. My hope is to have a project on this art map. I'm creating an app as well with AppEmbark that's going to have an interactive map where they can source, so I can use my social media and the restaurant social media to double down on the advertising. But I want a mural in every quadrant of Tallahassee. So when tourists come through here, they're actually seeing the full circle of Tallahassee, and it's not just localized in one area of town. Thank you.
It's pretty cool. You've seen her art all around town, and now you've met the artist. Pretty cool. It's great stuff you're doing. You did it, too. Look, you survived. Okay, Megan, come on up. Megan O'Neill. Oh, there you are. Yeah, okay. Megan is the community engagement coordinator at COCA, and you know, if you know anything about art in our community and any level of appreciation, you know what a remarkable job COCA has done and continues to do. But this one in particular is the Art Entrepreneurs Institute, a very cool new idea.
All right, so for those who don't know me, I'm Megan. I am filling in for Audra Pittman, who I'm sure many of you are familiar with, so we'll see how this goes. But we'll be talking about our latest endeavor, which is the Tallahassee Arts Entrepreneurs Institute. Ready to go. Oh. Oh, okay. We can wait. Great. Okay. So Tallahassee, at COCA, we always like to say that the arts live here. And that's because this community is not only filled with government representatives and organizations as well as universities, it's bustling and just overflowing with arts and culture. And we are so lucky and proud to be able to support this community in all of its efforts. So a little bit more about us. We're the local arts agency. And aside from this program we're going to be talking about, we also offer grant programs, arts education, public art services. You can find more at our website or grab one of our brochures if you're interested in learning more. I got to get my timing down with this. There we go. All right, so for us, arts entrepreneurs includes a whole array of creative businesses. That can include visual artists, museum technicians, sound engineers. Thank you for being here. Could also be fashion designers, architects, rendering drawers, graphic design. All of those different entities are what we consider arts entrepreneurs. So the reason we sort of decided to go down this route is because we recently did a survey with the FSU Center for Economic Forecasting, and these are some of the numbers that we found. So clearly, for-profit arts businesses are making an impact in our local community, and we want to find a way to help support, sustain, and grow those businesses. All right, and so here's where we come in. Obviously, just like in visual arts, in music, we are all about collaboration. We really don't think there's any way to grow without working together, especially in a community organization like we are. And so through this Tallahassee Arts Entrepreneurs Institute, we are looking to partner with different community resources, such as, Leon County, Visit Tallahassee, City of Tallahassee, Florida State University, the Jim Moran, Institute for Global Entrepreneurship, FAMU, the Small Business Development Center, as well as Arrow and TCC. We are so excited to partner with all of these local entrepreneur resources so that we can sort of infuse them into the arts. This program is sponsored in part by the Knight Foundation. We were very excited to receive a grant funded from them, and we can't wait to get this program started. They're all about communities, communication, and that really fits in with what this program is all about. Nope, so close. There we go. All right, so eligibility. We basically have only three eligibility requirements for this program. You must own or manage a creative for-profit business for 3 years or more, be a resident of Tallahassee and Leon County, and be 18 years of age or older. I get a lot of questions on the first eligibility requirement. This is very broad. If you are a musician who teaches private lessons, that is totally fair game. So that's the big question we get. This program is designed to be a small cohort, so we're going to cap this program at 15 people participating. And the reason we're doing that is we really want to build those connections. We want everybody to be able to hear each other's stories and experiences, be able to connect on those and really reach each other. There are going to be 4 half-day in-person sessions, and those are going to be held once a month from, I believe, 1 to 5 p.m., and that'll be in August, September, October, November. And they are going to be hosted at the new Jim Moran Institute in downtown Tallahassee, which you haven't been there. It is gorgeous, and we are so excited to get to use that space. There will also be online sessions after those 4 months are over, just to keep engaging. Obviously, as an arts entrepreneur or business owner, you don't have a lot of time to go to a bunch of meetings, so we're going to try and really engage online. And so that'll include discussion boards, different resources, as well as archived presentations that people can go back to and review. At the end of the program, every participant will receive a $300 stipend towards their own professional development organization of their choosing. It can be local, it can be regional, it can be national. Here are some examples of different organizations that someone might want to be a part of. We have the Florida Association of Public Art Professionals, the Association of Performing Arts Professionals, and the whole reason we're doing this is because our community is very diverse, and the arts live here, and we want to support that and encourage that to continue growing. So we hope that you all will help spread the word to your arts artist friends and help us make this first year great so that we can keep continuing to do it.
Megan, by staying within the rules, you threw everybody off. Try not to. Carly Cinderai, you can kind of move your way up. Carly's the executive director of the Sharing Tree, and one of the things that you're going to see a lot tonight, but where our community is evolving, is how to use existing space better. And what Carly has done is really remarkable, and she's going to tell you about it. And when you do, all the presenters, just grab the mic, because when you're turning to look at the screen, folks are kind of losing it a little. So.
Grab the mic. All right. Thank you. How many of you have been to the Sharing Tree? Awesome. Okay, that's about half. There's no excuse anymore. The Sharing Tree is a reusable resource center. Easier understood is we're like a Goodwill, but for art and school supplies. We've existed now for nearly a decade, so that in and of itself as a nonprofit organization is pretty spectacular. We've given teachers free school supplies at the cap of nearly $1 million. That's pretty spectacular. What we do is we take in donated materials, everything from buttons and corks and scraps of fabric, and we give it free to school teachers, and we also transform trash to treasure. Now, equally as important to the teacher giveaways is this trash to treasure concept. And kids, when they're in our workshops, and not only are they learning about being kind to our environment, but they're looking at weird and wacky materials and they're turning it into art. It's a very creative process, things that they're not getting anymore. So what happened to our organization after 10 years is we were faced with a lot of trouble, obstacles. We're a nonprofit organization. We were told about a year ago today that our building had sold in Midtown. So we had to find a building, lickety-split, and turn it into something. So we couldn't find anything at the rate that we were paying in Midtown. It was a really good deal. And so we, lo and behold, through a commissioner and some friends, found some space at the center. Now, the center, the old Tallahassee Mall, has had its ups and downs as well. And we have been right there the whole time amidst all of that. And it has been a process and it has been a journey. But I'm here to tell you that definitely when one door closes, with creativity, many more will open. So I was looking at what we were, and I was thinking, well, yes, we're this great organization, but if we're having to move, you know, and we keep facing these obstacles, we're missing the mark. What do we got to do to really hit the home run? So I was looking at my son, Zaid, and he was sitting there, and he was playing in our then very small kid zone, and he was playing, and he was going, "This is an astronaut," and it was a cork, and I was, "Okay, baby, yeah, baby." And so I was looking at him, and then I was looking at the stuff on the wall, and okay, well, but he's giving it energy, and that's really where the recycled, the reusable materials can really be put to its magic purpose, right? So I had this idea, the Creative Play Lab, Kids Museum meets Adventure Playground meets Reusable Resource Makerspace, and in the center now we have, we rebuilt half of our space at 7,000 square feet. For pennies on the dollar, about $2,000, we now have a Lego wall. Kids can walk up and build Legos in and out. We have a big magnet wall. There's murals everywhere. Kids are told not to be careful, don't touch. They're told touch everything, explore, tinker, because that sort of innovative thinking is where the KCCI catalysts come from, where the COCA, the artists are going to come from. We do so much in Tallahassee for the adult entrepreneurs, but what about the kids that are feeding into that? So that's really where all of my passion is from, and this is our space now, and I'm so proud of it. I hope you all come and see it. We're going to be doing things like summer camps. We're going to be doing Parents Night Out. We have a maker space, so you can sit there and make little recycled robots with your child. And so what we're doing, I think, for community and for the artists and everyone, and especially for kids, told there is no wrong or right answer. Just explore the universe, and you will fail sometimes, and you will have to figure it out. But I think there's real magic and potential in that. So I'm super jazzed to see. And most of this is donated stuff. Most of this is stuff where we took our creativity, this crew of people, and transformed. Those are easels that we made out of old wood. So I'm really proud of it. I hope you guys will come and see. I think it's a really authentic addition to Tallahassee. And we are in the old Tallahassee Mall, the center. And that's it.
My guess is there's probably 10 things in everybody's house that's in this room that Carly can use. And think about that. And look what she's doing with it. It's what's happening at the Sharing Tree is remarkable. When you go around town, we're seeing new developments. We're seeing interesting new projects happen, some that are just on the horizon. No one knows more about that in this town than Ed Murray from Talcor, and that's next.
Thanks. Hello. What I wanted to talk about, instead of working on projects all over town, we'll just talk about what's going on within a quarter of a mile of here. There's so much activity. I believe every great community has to have a healthy downtown, and that's what we're continuing to have one more and more. So the first project I'll talk about is Cascades. It's you guys know where Cascade Park? Everybody walked around Cascade Park? Pretty much, okay. So our community invested over $30 million in Cascades Park. We bought a beautiful urban landscape in town. What this is, it's going to be about a $140 million project. It's going to have residential dwelling units. It's going to have retail. It's going to have a boutique hotel. Construction has started, and it's going to be finished. It's beautiful if you look at this. It's going to be finished around fall of 2020. Lindsay said she'd like the Christmas tree in November, so I think that's where we are with that. It's going to be about 44,000 square feet of office space, again, a boutique hotel. It's using CRA money, which again, CRA, I know CRA, occasionally it gets to be controversial, but really what a CRA is supposed to do, it's supposed to light a fire in an area that needs development and stand back and let the fire grow. That's what that's done. That's going to be a it's a fantastic project. Next project. Okay, there's that one. I can keep talking about it. Put a few slides in. Let's see. Yeah, it's nice. Here's the layout. It's going to come in. The other thing I was going to talk about on this, there are two projects being built. that are going to have market price housing, basically apartments. There's nowhere for, there's very few places for people to live that are in the 25 to 40 year old bracket that want to have somewhere where their friends live in Buckhead or Nashville or Seattle. These places are going to, that project and as well as Envision are going to have those type developments. Osley Law Firm site, this project's on the books, 19 stories. It's going to have a, they've announced a Lowe's Hotel. The Tisch family wants to build a Lowe's Hotel. Hopefully they're going to break ground in the next 6 months or so, maybe less. It's going to have great views. Look at that. That's right next to the Bank of America building and right behind Leon County Courthouse. So from here, you're 300, 500 yards maybe. The hotel, there appears to be a demand for higher-end hotel, and that's where that's coming from. Rarely do I not keep talking. This is a project across from Hotel Duval. The name of it's going to be 40 North. It's where the Envision Credit Union site is. It's about a 3-acre, 3.5-acre site. This site is also eligible or are in participation for CRA funding. This is the second one in addition to Cascades. It's going to have workforce or basically market-priced housing. What that means is, this will probably shock you guys, but how the rents work on that, they're projecting, and so is Cascades, that they can get around $2 a square foot per month for rent. What that means is, if you're renting an 800-square-foot apartment, you're going to pay about $1,600 a month. That moves the curve in our market. It makes a lot nicer, a lot urban. This is not how it's going to look. They have to design boxes. So you guys at the city, don't get nervous. It's not going to look like this. So it's going to look a lot better than this. But they have to put boxes in so they can figure out, like you're working with Legos, to determine if that's the way they want the project to go. But the test is going to be, is there a market for 600 or 700 workforce housing apartment units? I think there is. And I think if you see that be successful, I think you could see 3 or 4 more of those come along. But these first guys are taking a risk. And that the risk is also what factors in with the CRA funding. So these are two, again, every project's a good project. Now, don't look at the address. I didn't proofread this. The address is 201 East Park Avenue. It's the office building that's being built on the corner of Park and Monroe, where the Florida Home Builders Association was and where the Guarantee Bank was. This is a development that Brian and Catherine Ballard are doing. That's not at all correct. It's 65,000 square feet of office space. It's in the lease-up phase now. It's a beautiful building if you guys get a chance to go through that. That, again, is a couple of hundred yards from us here. If you total all the development that we're talking about just on this page, just in my 6 minutes, it totals about $300 million. And that's roughly $300 million of product just within a quarter of a mile. Sage Restaurant. Anybody been to Sage? Really one of the nicer, higher-end restaurants? Terry White of Sage has committed to do a restaurant in the downtown section of 201 East Park. He hasn't named it yet, but he says it's going to be an Italian steakhouse, a high-end restaurant that serves lunch and dinner. These are some drawings. The architects Lewis and Whitlock are doing its design work. He hasn't named it yet. He expects to name it within the next 3 to 4 weeks. But it'll be, they've committed to be nice. Last couple of things, you've got DoubleTree is doing, on the 17th floor of DoubleTree, they're doing a cantilevered bar restaurant that faces out toward, if you've seen the cranes downtown, you now can't ride on Adams between that middle section of Adams there. Also, the Florida Power and Light, FP&L, they're building their corporate headquarters, not corporate, they're building their legislative headquarters in town. The last thing is, you guys familiar with Urban Tallahassee? Is TJ here? TJ Lewis? TJ was the founder of Urban Tallahassee. It was his child. He's recently gone to work with the planning department. So he sold Urban to my company. And we thank you for that. We promise and commit that we will do a good job for you. That's where Urban is, where you find out. That's where you find out information on development projects. And we want to keep it going and make sure, other than the Democrat, that you can find out what's going on. So thank you, guys.
Thank you, Ed. Yeah, it's pretty cool, TJ. It's good. The water's good in the public trough. You're gonna like it. Okay, Tiffany, you're okay. Tiffany's here. If you see a lot of things about KCCI around town, and you just don't know they're KCCI for the most part. If you've got children, you've been at the children's playscape at Cascades Park, KCCI project. There are KCCI projects like that all over town, and there's one that you may have seen but not know where it was from, and we're going to find out a little bit more about it today with Tiffany Bowers. Tiffany.
Hi, I'm Tiffany Bowers, and I was lucky to be chosen as one of the 2017 KCCI Catalysts, and it was 12 of us from very diverse backgrounds that were chosen to create a urban parklet. And so throughout our project, we were given an example of our city logo through Visit Tallahassee, which is this hashtag, IHeartTally. Our muralist on the team, Cosby, created a mural in Clayman Plaza, and then this was our original design of our art structure. In doing so, we also created a mobile version that could be used at various events around the city. And so these are some of the places that it was featured to generate a buzz about our project. The location. So in our directives, we were told that the project had to be featured on the south side of Tallahassee to create just more fervor and vitality in the area. And so where we chose was at Adams Street and FAMU Way as a welcome to the things that are already going on the south side in that area. And we had to meet for 16 months. It was a busy time. We met every Thursday. We had to meet with commissioners, the mayor, and everyone to just get permission and approval. In doing so, we also had to raise the funds to build. And so we had to process our own personal networks, as well as we received a Knight Foundation grant. And then with the help of the city and the counties, we were able to make it happen. So once we got towards the end of the project, we had to make some design changes. It was just very large. And so in keeping with the IHeartTally theme, we went with the city code, which is TLH, but we also use it as Talent Lives Here. And so we kept the iHeart as a feature of the sculpture that we created. We partnered at the end with Oak Ridge Elementary School to create a mural of why the children at this school loved Tallahassee with the muralist on our team, Cosby Hayes. And so it covered the sculpture until it was revealed. And so on April 12th, we had our big reveal of the project. We had our over 50 sponsors there, as well as other guests and dignitaries. And we just ask that people enjoy our art feature, our art structure, interact with it, but find ways not to climb on it, because we are, we want your safety to be our top priority. So this is our urban parklet on the south side of Tallahassee.
I saw, Mike Pate, are you still in the room? Without Mike Pate, there is no KCCI. It was Mike's idea, Mike's project. He brought it to this community, and years later, it's become part of the bedrock, and very cool. Thank you, Mike, for that. The present and hopefully future publisher at the Democrat, Skip Foster, has done a remarkable job. Well, I mean, he's here now. We want him to stay, right? I mean, yeah. He's done a remarkable job, as have the folks there, of building on the paper into a dynamic force online. And if many of you use the online Democrat, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. It's become relevant through a number of different platforms. And one of the things they've done is find a new way in detail to start a conversation with everybody who lives within reach of everything they do. And Skip is here to tell you about it.
Thanks, Gary, and it's always wowed with, you know, to be called relevant as the praise for the, I think I'll try that on my wife when I get home tonight. Honey, you're so relevant to our marriage. So we're going to talk about data. You know, it used to be a faith-based world out there where we would say, you know, the newspaper hits the driveway and you see ads and stories, and then we kind of hope people act on them. Now, if you go to data.tallahassee.com, great website to enter in your notes, we're using data to drive so much of our news coverage. These are just a few of the databases that we currently feature there now. One of them is Eat Your Heart Out Ways. We've got a gridlock guide that is really amazing. We are able to mash up Google traffic maps with every webcam in Florida, every DOT webcam that exists. So before you take a trip or even while you're at a rest stop, not while you're driving, you'll want to check that out. I know we, you know, we're working on our crime problem here, but while we're solving all of those and preventing any more from happening, we're able to use a database provided by local law enforcement to locate every shooting that happens in town, and you're actually able to click on those and cross-check them against other information. Restaurant ratings, if you're like me, you're like, I don't want to know, I do want to know, I don't want to know, I do want to know. So you can kind of toggle through that mind game checking here. And, of course, a lot of these, like these one listed, get perfect scores, have zero violations, and so you can rest easy when you go to Red Hills Catering and Grits and Gravy. This is a database we did that we actually did for the entire country. Every refugee that enters the United States is now in a searchable database on our website by country of origin and by town and state into which they entered the United States. So we have a lot of Congolese refugees in Tallahassee. I didn't know that. Maybe you did. This is a look at state salaries and report cards. So we pay for them. You might as well know who's making what and how your schools are doing. People call and say, oh, you shouldn't run all that. That's really terrible. And then we ask to look at their browser history, and they hang up. So also, there's a lot of summer camps in town. It's getting to be that time of year, so I just included this one because it's kind of relevant. We've got them broken down by sports, general, obviously broken down by geography, vacation Bible schools, you name it, and this accompanies a print product. And so this is, you see, the kind of marriage of data and print working together. And finally, and this is really probably the coolest one, our archives are now open. It used to be microfilm. You had to know the date something happened. Now you can search by topic, by keyword, every paper back into the beginning of time. So if you want to find out the first time your name appeared in the Democrat, you can do it. Here's the one that was in the movie Spotlight when they laid all the papers out on the table. I know I watched it 10 times. Okay, so, and this is the Chartbeat program that we use on a daily basis. This is a snapshot. It's a little hard to read of the day that President Thrasher announced the ban on Greek life. We had 31 concurrents, which is unbelievable. That's in a little tiny moment of time. 3,100 people were reading that individual story. This is a breakdown of our traffic from 2017. We start at desktop. We're the only site that's one of the very few sites state workers can access, so we have heavy desktop traffic compared to some of our sister papers, and you can see that about half of that is news and a lot of it is lifestyle. It becomes much more of a sports vehicle when you're talking about mobile, and so that makes sense, right? On your phone, you're looking for quick hit information. You're not necessarily sitting down to read a long story or get into the opinion section or something like that. So now that's the kind of news side of things. We're going to talk a little bit about how we use data on the advertising side, because again, we don't have to just guess who's watching things and use a mass market approach. This is what the world used to look like. Newspaper, TV, and radio, and then a little thing called the internet came along. Maybe you didn't know this. 60% of the households in America saw the MASH series finale. You can see that that's dropped a little off. I'm certainly not saying How I Met Your Mother was MASH level programming, but Friends was pretty popular, and it did less than half. And so this just shows the erosion of broadcast. Okay, I'm going to read these real quick in my 20 seconds. This is the current advertising landscape. Okay, maybe I'm not going to make it, but you can see compared to that pyramid, we've got a few more advertising vehicles competing for our attention. Facebook and Twitter are pretty big ones on that list. Who knew this was the slide I'd be stretching out on? So now it's so much easier to target the people you want, right? So not just a classified ad in the paper that hits everybody whether they're looking for a job or not. Now we can start to drill down. Full-time, part-time, geography, the salary. You've seen these on job sites, all the different ways. And, of course, you're being targeted geographically and behaviorally as well. So what we're trying to say to small businesses is there's a better way than mass marketing. Mass marketing can be a part of your overall mix. But what we're really trying to do is start to target the specific people that you want to reach with specific advertising. So here is, you know, the kind of questions that people need to be asking. Who is my audience? What big of a slice are they? Are there really only 10% of the people that are interested in what I'm trying to sell? How can we create frequency, right? The number of touch points that you have on a buying decision are so much greater than they used to be. And so here's a kind of a case study. A local financial institution wants to grow auto loans. That's only 11% of the population that's considering it. And so we're able to target digitally car owners that have vehicles that are ready to age out, internet users with certain characteristics, and you can see the other things, and then we target them with specific digital products. And in this particular case, I'm not making this up, there was 186% increase with this financial institution on the number of folks that were looking at auto loans, and that translated to 2,300 hard leads. So welcome to the new world of advertising. My time is up.
Fabulous. Megan's ready to go. How many of you knew that all that was available on the website? It's pretty cool. I mean, so there's a lot more depth there in your daily paper. Megan Doherty's here. A few years ago, we voted as a community to extend the sales tax. And you know, what does a penny buy? Some pretty cool things. And Megan's going to kind of bring us up to speed.
All right, good evening, everyone. I am so pleased to be here this evening to share with you what a penny can build. Like Gary said, I work for your Tallahassee and Leon County Blueprint Intergovernmental Agency. I really want to emphasize your because at its core, Blueprint is an agency that was created by the people for the future of our community and powered by this penny sales tax. So since 2004, Blueprint has invested over $450 million in building roads, parks, public spaces, bike lanes, trails, acquiring sensitive lands. And I think that we can really see with this picture of downtown that this investment has not only been transformational, it has literally changed the landscape of our community. So we, through the Blueprint program, make some big investments in regional improvements, one of the biggest being the Capital Circle Corridor Widening Project. Along the way, we've also had the opportunity to invest in some really great public spaces. This is the future Debbie Lightsey Nature Park along the Capital Circle Northwest Corridor. And these multi-purpose projects are really, really reflect the Blueprint holistic approach to project implementation. Under the leadership of our city and county commissioners, a Blueprint project will never be simply just a road, not simply just a stormwater solution for downtown, simply not just cleaning up a contaminated brownfield site. Blueprint projects are really going to reflect that holistic philosophy because we're going to take those investments that we're making in critical infrastructure improvements and use that opportunity to also create great spaces for our community. We know our community loves them. They also encourage private investment and contribute to local economic growth. So just like these slides are going to keep moving probably faster than I can keep talking, the penny is going to keep rolling in through 2040 thanks to Leon County voters. So I am pleased to share with you a little bit of what you can expect in the next few years from the Blueprint program. So that's a lot of pennies. This year, we are going to be designing what I think is a really cool feature along the Capitol Cascades Trail. We are going to be building a skatable art installation just to the west of Railroad Square, as you can see it there. So clearly, this will be a place for people to skate, also for people watching people skate, and we really think it's going to be a neat addition to the Capitol Cascades Trail, along with the History and Culture Trail. This will be installations throughout the corridor, art, interpretive signage, all sorts of mediums, and what we're doing with this trail is paying tribute to the people, the neighborhood, the events that happened in the area surrounding the FAMU campus, and we really want to bring this history to life and to light for our community. Look for really big upgrades coming to Magnolia Drive later this year. Blueprint has partnered with Leon County. We're going to be enclosing some of these open swales along the roadway. We're going to be building a new shared use path, which will be great for people walking and biking along Magnolia Drive. We're also going to be undergrounding the utilities along this corridor, so both an aesthetic and a people-friendly improvement. Beginning in 2020, the last segment of that Capitol Circle project, Blueprint's biggest project to date, probably, in scale, it will be under construction. Blueprint has partnered with FDOT to complete this project. It's a huge partnership for our community. FDOT is investing over $100 million in completing this final segment near the airport. We also have a new roadway under construction in Northeast Tallahassee. Wilani Boulevard is now under construction. The first few phases or segments are being built in coordination with the Canopy development. And once it's done, it'll go all the way up to Shamrock. And we're hopeful this will really set up our community for a new I-10 interchange in the future. Also beginning in 2020, we're going to be making some really big investments in our bike route and greenways infrastructure projects. Beginning in 2020, each year, we're going to spend $1.5 million on greenways, trails, bicycle facilities. And I really want to emphasize how big of a game changer this has the potential to be for our community. This is Copenhagen, number one bicycling city in the world, recognized for that all the time. They estimate that they've spent about $80 million over 40 years building this network. We're going to be spending $30 million over 20 years. So that really has the potential for some really big impacts. And I'm really excited to see this network grow and our community benefit from that. The Office of Economic Vitality also has two projects funded by the penny sales tax that I think will have big impacts for our community. The Tallahassee International Airport will be getting upgrades to the tune of about $13 million. And we'll be partnering with FSU to construct a convention center downtown in coordination with the development of their arena district. So also just want to give out a shout out to all the great work our OEV team does. They are your one-stop shop for economic data in our community. They also have some really great programs for our local businesses, such as the Urban Vitality Job Creation Program, Capital Loop, Florida Capital for Biz. Please go check out all that they're doing at oevforbusiness.org. So I've shared a lot. But the good news is there is like so much more good stuff to share. We've got 27 projects in this next iteration of the sales tax program, $1.2 billion in economic impact for our community. I think it's going to be really good, y'all. It's going to be good. So please go to leonpenny.org, see the projects, and thank you.
You need to try and be more enthusiastic about, you know, like, yeah, I mean, you should like this stuff. Okay, here's a, we're calling this one Remembering and Reinvention. This is, you're going to like this one. Tiffany Baker is the museum director for the Florida Network Capitol Museum, Florida Historic Capitol Museum, and Jonathan Grandage is the executive director of The Grove. And it'll be a seamless presentation because they're also husband and wife.
You outed us.
Yeah. Gary outed us. Usually we try to keep that a secret. That's what we have different last names. So, okay, so let's get started. We are, as Gary said, a couple of history nerds. And, well, is your mic not working? Oh, yeah. That might be better for all of us.
Hello,
okay.
Hello.
So this picture that you see here that we started out with is to kind of show you what we do on our weekends. We live in Frenchtown, and we like to adventure, and we walk, and we often, you know, eat and drink. John's eating a loquat.
If I'm in your yard stealing loquats or mulberries, please do not call the police.
Yes, this is the Civic Center. And so we live our passion and are able to implement it at work every day. And this project, the Florida Stories Walk Tallahassee Tour, is one that I worked on at the Historic Capitol Museum. It is a digital walking tour of downtown historic sites in Tallahassee. And our entry in the downtown is one of 20 around the state. So the way that it works is that you download the app and then download the tour. The reason why we did this project is that when we were approached in 2017, this map is how it looked. And I was embarrassed that there was this big gaping hole in the map of the Florida Stories app with no Tallahassee. Also, there is a direct economic benefit of heritage tourism, and we are not at capacity here in this county. And so this is a way to draw more tourists to Tallahassee and exploring our downtown sites. So how far is the walking tour? It's between 2.8 and 3.5 miles. It is doable to do on foot. I ran it in July, right after we were awarded the grant, to see if it was possible to do and not die. And you can do it. You don't have to do it continuously. You can break it up, you know, start at Cascades Park, go to Riley and Smoky Hollow, and then three Saturdays from now, finish it out. It's history on demand on your time. And it's basically each site has about 3 to 7 minutes of historic footage, as well as narration and music, and it is just fabulous for you to enjoy. And we specifically targeted the sites that we did to capitalize on some of that fire that Ed was talking about, and then also Megan's blueprint projects. We were trying to identify things that were coming online so that we would specifically be sending people past not just preservation, but public and private investment. And so that's why we chose what we did. The App Store and Google Play are where you can find it. It is free. And that's how it looks once you're in it. I have it on my phone for you to sample after if you want to come and check it out before you download it. I'm happy to show it to you. And the thing that's most exciting about this opportunity is that we aren't just stopping with downtown. The Humanities Council is continuing to fund this program, and we specifically designed the downtown tour so that you can jump on and off. Walk Frenchtown will be coming this summer. There's opportunities maybe for Walk FAMU, Walk FSU. Essentially, we are trying to create a connectivity, a solution to get people moving around historic sites in Tallahassee. So I'm going to move Grove now.
So you've heard the best. Now here's the rest. I was, Tiffany's kind enough to include me. Some of you may know the Grove Museum opened to the public on March 11, 2017. How many folks have been there? Thank you all very much for your support. It means a tremendous amount to the state of Florida. I think this site was a vital one to preserve and to help share the history of our community. Now, this was a massive project, cost about $5.6 million to preserve the Call Collins House. Here you see scaffolding erected around the house, cracks in the home is big enough to stick your hand into. Deterioration over the years, a little bit of settling of that 500,000 bricks, 10,000 square foot home on our pipe clay soil we have here in Tallahassee. Massive amount of interior restoration work. Let me tell you folks something. Preservation is personal. You in this home can touch the walls. House was built by enslaved craftspeople in the 1830s. This home and others like it of this age represent the true foundation of our history and our heritage in this built environment. First floor hallway restoration. If you come to the Grove, I'll give you all kinds of information about it. You can also touch the past and some of the details we revealed, the original craftsmanship. Let me tell you, when I'm struggling to hang a picture in my house, I can look at mortise and tenon joints done with hand tools from the 1830s, and we can connect those skills to a new generation of people in the skilled building trades that are going to underlie really the future of a lot of the development that some of you folks are talking about. Not just a site, it's also a beautiful natural landscape. It pains me to have to sit and watch birds every day, playing in the fountain, nice migratory robins, beautiful flowers. Shameless plug for a nature walk featuring myself on the 19th, if y'all want to come out and see that. So we do a lot with the site. We don't just focus on the historic home, but it is about the fact that, look at that tree canopy. Not here to talk about saving every tree in Tallahassee, but this provides a tremendous free public park near the center of downtown Tallahassee. And we have an amazing, we have 100 different varieties of trees, 3 dozen different kinds of migratory birds on the site. And in addition to preserving the house, it's really about the history. Well, what is that history? We've made it our mission at the Grove Museum to engage the public in dialogue about civil rights in American history. When this home was built, very few people had access to civil rights. Maybe the owner, Richard Keith Call, who owned other folks who built the house, all the way up to Leroy Collins, who was at Selma in March of 1965, and that really ended up costing him his political career. And if it's here for an hour, I'll give you all the background on that. Tiffany, take it back.
Basically, though, what we want to leave you with is that it's not just about the big projects that have the millions of dollars behind them. Placemaking and preservation go hand in hand, and it happens at one intersection at a time. And this is private business owners who are taking the opportunity to use an adaptive reuse model on historic properties. And it's not just happy motoring, which is happening at South Adams. That entire intersection is an excellent example of how historic fabric can contribute to the community in a way that is positive, business-driven, and be an economic driver. And this is the inside of Happy Motoring. If you haven't been yet, you have to go. They did a great job of kind of letting the building speak for itself. And then the other project here that is coming online, these two, the Graffiterio building. And then I love this image is one of the original architectural drawings from the Coca-Cola building, which will now be Proof Brewing Company in the next year. So again, kind of looking at the historic fabric, these existing properties, and reusing them in a way that is dynamic and exciting and driving people to think about our community differently. And this is all very important because we are coming up on hashtag TLH2024, our 200th anniversary. And if we don't make decisions like that, that incremental preservation and encouraging those folks, we aren't going to have history, frankly, to celebrate. And so it's our big projects and those small projects. And in the end, we're going to hopefully have something to celebrate in 2024.
And,
come walk with us.
Plant more loquats in your yard. Thank you.
Jonathan, if they want to go on the nature walk, you said the 19th? May 19th. And they just come at what time at the Grove? 10:30 at the Grove. I mean, guys, we drive by it all the time and never stop to see what a remarkable thing there is right next to downtown. What we like to do here is kind of take a little breather and from the speed, because every once in a while there's a topic that needs just a little bit more. And so we give one panel discussion so that we can kind of sit and dig a little deeper into one pretty cool subject. So I'm going to ask one of the board members of the Village Square, Bill Maddox. Bill, come on up. Altamese Barnes, the executive director of Riley House. Hi. Good to see you. And Javita Woodridge of Volunteer Florida. Hey, how are you? Good. Yeah, right there. And I'm just going to leave it to you guys to sort of introduce this discussion. Bill, I'll leave it with you. And then when this discussion is done, we'll be right back for the final third of our speed rounds. Bill?
Thank you, Gary. It's my pleasure to be here tonight and to welcome all of you as a member of the Village Square Board of Directors. We've got a little presentation now that'll still go fast, but maybe not quite as fast as what you've been accustomed to. Over here on the right is a picture of the Tallahassee Civil Rights Heritage Walk that you may have seen. It runs between City Hall and the County Courthouse right across from the Capitol. And it was the work of a group that I had the privilege of being a part of several years ago. About, I don't know, 6, 8 years ago now, Vita. We were both in year 2 of KCCI. And the small group that we were a part of, that I was a part of, had various presentations given to it of potential projects that we could take on. And there was a gentleman from this planning office who came to us, showed us a bunch of historical photographs from the Tallahassee Democrat about the civil rights movement here in Tallahassee, and said that they wanted to lay this sidewalk. And I was captivated from the beginning of seeing these photographs. And part of the reason that I was is because I have a background in opinion journalism and have led workshops on rhetoric and persuasive writing at various universities around the country. And I had never seen anything that did a better job of capturing certain ideas about persuasion than many of the signs that were depicted in these various photographs. So you can see here several of these, and there are many more, and if you get me started, we'll never get out of here tonight. But in the course of then taking part in this planning group that was to lay that sidewalk, I not only had the opportunity to meet, to get to know Vita, who is now also a member of our board of directors here at the Village Square, but I also got acquainted with this jewel of our city. Althamese Barnes, as many of you know, runs the Riley House Museum and was a part of our committee and has been doing all sorts of things before and since to help bring to life African-American history here in our town. And I think this history is important in its own right for all sorts of reasons that I'm sure Althamese and others will tell us about. But I also think part of the reason why I think this civil rights history is particularly important is because for those of us at the Village Square, we live in a day of constant protest. And so much of what is happening these days in our world fails to recognize many of the principles that these folks, these FAMU students, many of them, understood about persuasion. We're in an age where everyone wants to vent their grievances, but very few seemingly want to engage someone to think differently who might not yet agree with them. So we want to bring some of that history to life, but really you guys at the Riley House go way back before the civil rights movement. Give us a brief overview of who Mr. Riley was, and then I'm particularly interested in what we'll see in our next slide, which is this barbershop that has just recently opened. So tell us first about the Riley House, and then let's talk about the barbershop.
Okay, Mr. Riley, for those who do not know, was born right here in Tallahassee, 1865, born into slavery, not too far from where we are sitting right now, because as Tallahassee was set up at that time, it wasn't as large. Of course, that's what we are. But after slavery, he chose education and became the first black principal of the Lincoln High School and served for 33 years. Unfortunately, Mr. Riley, though he gave a lot to this community, education, he owned property, real estate, provided a place for people to live, rentals, in Smoky Hollow, not too far from here. There came a time in life when his property was about to be demolished by the city. There was a desire to put an electric substation on that site. So some individuals before my time came together, raised the money to buy that house back from the city and turned it into, well, they restored it. They didn't live long enough to do their second objective, which was to make it a center to document and talk about African-American history. Of course, when I came along and joined them and opened the museum in 1997, started some of the early historical projects, I was confused because we were going before city commission, state entities, whatever, and it was like, I'm saying, you know, this is important. Riley House is important. The same as what happened with Smoky Hollow and the Smoky Hollow Village, but it was like, duh, what are you talking about? So it came to me, I'm talking about something that people don't know about. We've had a lot of people to come into Tallahassee to go to school, stayed here, but knew nothing about the history. We had people who lived here, but because of the laws, we lived in separate communities. There were independent black communities because of the segregated housing. Had your own stores, your schools, your churches. So, but what do we do about it? It's up to us to help educate so that as the planners, the developers, and whomever are going about these different projects, they know that this needs to be on the agenda.
Great. So if you haven't been over to the Riley House, there's a number of exhibits inside the house itself, and then, of course, between it and Cascade Park are now all sorts of interesting outdoor exhibits that have to do with the shotgun houses that were common in that neighborhood at the time, and some of the previous photographs have shown that. But the latest addition to this kind of grand area is this barbershop that you see here. And this is a barbershop that dates back, it's over on this side of Althamese. This is from the original Smoky Hollow neighborhood, correct?
Yes, it is.
And you guys managed to locate it and then have some folks help you to renovate it and then move it back to the neighborhood, in effect. to now be a kind of historical relic. Tell us how that whole process worked and what sort of purpose the barbershop is now serving.
Okay, with the three-year history of the Smoky Hollow Group, we brought people who were eminent domain from Smoky Hollow together. They shared not only the residential history, but the commercial history. This barbershop was the only piece of the commercial history that we discovered. We discovered it through former city manager Anita Favors. This barbershop was out behind the airport, and they were getting ready to demolish it. So she called and gave me an idea of what she thought someone shared with her. Because a lot of this was in the Tallahassee Democrat about the Smoky Hollow project, Mr. Bolton, who was the surveyor with Department of Transportation back when Smoky Hollow was eminent domain, came to our group and shared the story of the barbershop. And he said, yeah, I know where it is. And it was moved and became the first office of the Juvenile Detention Center. So I called Bob Jones, Barbara Maddox, some of from the state might know them, and said, hey, I want you to go out to this airport with me. They met me on a rainy day. We had our umbrellas and all, and they said, yeah, it is historic. So, and we found out that it was the barbershop through Mr. Bolton's testimony. So the chairman of our Raleigh board, who's a retired assistant superintendent, Annie Harris, met with the Lively Botech School, and the barbershop was taken from the airport to Lively, and the professors and the students did the restoration, and then Blueprint brought it back to its home in Smoky Hollow.
So, yeah, it's a great example of historic preservation, and yet it lives on because one can now come and visit and see the barber's chair and all the rest, right?
That is correct. We are in the process now of really making that a corridor because you have the Riley House, which is in Smoky Hollow. Then you have Smoky Hollow Village, which is a national model. If you Google Cascades Park, Smoky Hollow, the entire history of Smoky Hollow will come up. It's in the Library of Congress. And one thing I want to mention, too, I saw the word model in the program. We have scholars and researchers, preservationists coming from all over to learn and glean from what has happened here. I just want to read something quickly from the National Park Service. The folks at the National Park Service, because of our HAL survey, there was recently a model, Smoky Hollow Village, for the Barry Farm community in Washington, D.C. And we are getting calls all the time from people about this model, this eminent domain community, and National Park Service is saying, to their knowledge, this is the first one where the people have come back to tell the story and document it.
That's awesome. Okay, we're gonna pull Vita into our discussion in just a second. Before we do, I want to ask you one last question right at this moment, Althamese, and that is, on the right, there's a photo of your Emancipation Day celebration. This, I know, is something that happens every May the 20th. It's a commemoration of the reading of the Emancipation Proclamation as it occurred back in 1865 here in Tallahassee. But this year, May 20th falls on a Sunday, and I'm accustomed to coming over on my lunch hour at work and taking part and participating in this. What are you going to do this year because it's on a Sunday?
History must be authentic. It is authentic. So regardless of what day May 20th falls, that's the day that we will commemorate. This is a partnership with the Museum of Florida History. Now, initially, a lot of people in Florida, African Americans, started celebrating this holiday back in 1865, May 20th, when freedom cried, as they say it. But a lot of people in Florida were commemorating Juneteenth because they were not aware that Tallahassee happened on the way to Texas. General Ed McCook did the reading here. It was read later in Texas, but there was just somebody who pushed stronger or whatever, advocated stronger for it to be a national holiday. So that was another model that the Riley Museum got with the Knott House, Florida Museum of History, and restarted that celebration.
This is one of the fascinating things about African American history as it relates to Tallahassee. There's a lot that happened here that is of larger significance nationally. We'll find out about some more of this in just a minute, but I want to pull Vita in. So our next slide has a picture of a bunch of people sitting at a table, and I understand you've been a part of one of these. So tell us about the longest table and what this is all about and who's behind it.
Okay, well, a couple of different organizations are behind the longest table. It's really been great with the Village Square to partner with Leon County, the city, to bring just really extraordinary and unique programming to Tallahassee. And, you know, one of the focus areas for the Village Square, or actually the foundation, is to provide these spaces. I'm careful of using things like safe space because everybody has a different perspective about what that means, but a space where people feel comfortable talking about difficult issues, where they are able to recognize how they connect, but also how they may be divided, and then be able to have conversations across those divides. And we know that one of those that is particularly incendiary is race. So with the longest table, and I believe it had happened in D.C., at one point, but individuals from all over Tallahassee, and this has happened every year for several years, get together and share a meal. Now, that seems like something very simple. We do that with our family and our friends, but we typically do that with like-minded individuals and people who look like us. So the opportunity to get to know random folks who are sitting across from you at a table is a little bit overwhelming, but we have had extraordinary success and turnout for this. As much as we are divided, you'd be surprised at how many people, and many of you all have attended, do want an established way of connecting with other people. You don't go up to, if you're white, you don't go up to a black person and say, I really want to understand the black plight. Generally speak, just don't do that, okay? And it's just a really awkward thing sometimes to really try to understand where someone else is coming from, and so we want to try to facilitate that. So on the tables, actually, are varying questions and opportunities to connect. And we know that ultimately, people are willing to talk about different things when they have developed a relationship. So history and context is critical, and then I feel like that complements, the work that the Village Square is doing kind of complements that and says, listen, we want to make sure that people understand where we're coming from and what that context is, and you have to be able to ask people about that, know what their personal experiences have been like, and the reasons why they may act or live or think the way that they do. So at these events, you know that it's going to be ending soon, okay? It's time limited. You know that you have a meal, so you can kind of look down if you need to, or excuse yourself if you need to, and come back 45 minutes later. All these different things that if you are uncomfortable, you can kind of ease your way into having these conversations. Many of these folks end up having get-togethers, you know, four or eight of them, end up developing relationships, starting book clubs, some of the other really great do-it-yourself opportunities that the Village Square provides.
So, yeah, let me ask you about a couple of other things.
Yeah,
I know that in addition to the longest table, we also partner at the Village Square with the county and doing an event every year at the Moon called Created Equal that explores some of these questions. We have a project called Local Color that I know that you're a part of, where we get a chance when there's a incident or a crisis or some other sort of event that sets off fireworks, there's an opportunity for us to come and to compare notes with others and learn from that.
Yes.
And also Race to the Movies is another project. Give us a little taste of what these projects are all about.
Sure.
and what they've meant to you.
Yeah, so real quickly with Local Color, this is something that we're about a year into and have some really great partners like Florida Humanities Council who are supporting this work and the Knight Foundation. But the idea here is to foster hometown connectedness. Typically, we go straight to our echo chambers, whether that's on Facebook, and we know that there are algorithms for social media that provide you with feeds that give you exactly what you you already believe, right? So it's not just kind of a general, you know, mix of information that you're getting. You're going to get information that agrees with whatever your perspective is. And so we instead want to gather instead of separate. And that's what Local Color is all about. Our focus there is race. And so when a really difficult topic comes up nationally in particular, for example, the statues issue right after Charlottesville, within a week or so, we had had a place to meet and had a conversation about that. You can imagine that's very emotionally very raw. And then also there are a lot of conflicting facts, okay, because people have gone to those echo chambers. And so reconciling those facts, knowing exactly what happened, and then giving people that space to discuss why it's a difficult thing on one side or the other. Just real quickly with that, you know, we had a woman, a white woman who said, who was in her mid-60s, who said, has this always been an issue? This is the first time I'm hearing about statues being an issue. And then a black woman who was in her 70s who recounted so much about segregation and the experiences that she had, the idea of not being able to go to the Leroy Collins Library and look up and read books, and how passionate she was about education and that wasn't an option for her. She was crying. This white woman also started crying and said, I'm sorry that I didn't realize this. And the woman said, you don't need to apologize, but I'm glad that you're willing to listen. So that type of thing happens all the time with local color. Again, it's very quick that it pops up because we want to very quickly grab people and have them connect with people who are not like themselves over these issues so that they recognize that, hey, in Tallahassee, we're going to figure these things out. We're going to work through them. We don't all have to be best friends, but we're not going to demonize people. And then with Race to the Movies, real quickly, so it's always sort of a movie that focuses on race. So they've done Fruitvale Station, Crash, and Nick Maddox actually kind of leads that along with a woman that he works with, Kathy, what's her last name? I'm sorry, Kathy Jones, who is white, and they are very different on ideology, in terms of their backgrounds, and they have kind of this playful adversarial relationship. It can be intense sometimes, but they go to work together and they're fine with it, so it's really great. But that is very uncomfortable for a lot of people. Some of those movies I haven't even seen because as a black female, they strike me as just too much to handle. And so people get together. There are a variety of individuals from different backgrounds, and then they have a discussion about it. Nick and Kathy kind of share, and they model, which we try to do with the Village Square, what it looks like to have these difficult conversations and remain respectful toward one another. So you see them kind of go pretty far with each other, but because of their relationship, that works for them. And so it helps people understand how to do that in their own lives with difficult topics. So really love Race to the Movies. Not every month, but we have it several times a year. All of this is on our website. So much programming that's provided by the Village Square that not only is about race, it's about ideology, all kinds of tribal media, all kinds of things. That really cause you to think, but also your heart is typically touched, and you leave going, huh, it's really interesting.
So. Very good. There was a phrase that was used there in by Vita about hometown connectedness that I want to come back to in just a second, but we're almost done here. I want to go back to Althamese, and I know you're doing some work in Frenchtown, just got a grant to get some historic markers. When will we see those?
I would say a year from now, next July, we should have it.
And this will recount the history
to make a heritage trail, Frenchtown Heritage Trail. And right quickly, one of the first things that I did at Riley was to take my old VHS camera with the tripod and go around doing oral histories between 1997 and 2005. And the people I interviewed were like 80, 90, whatever. They've been deceased a long time. But we have oral histories where these people actually were born, raised in Frenchtown, and they walk us all through. So that's the history that we will capture with these markers.
And there'll surely be something about jazz music, I
yes.
trust.
You
know,
yes.
If you don't know, Frenchtown was a real hotbed for jazz
arts,
music, part of the
culture.
Jazz music tour. Our next slide, and I guess actually the next several, have to do with the story of Patricia Stevens. Here she is protesting out along with other FAMU students back in the early 60s outside the Florida Theater, segregated theater. Later you'll see scenes of her being arrested, collaborating with an FSU student, interestingly, during part of these protests. Eventually, Patricia and many of her FAMU students wind up in jail, and instead of posting bail, they chose instead to remain in jail for, 7 weeks or so, and stage what became the first jail-in of the civil rights movement right here in Tallahassee. The old jail, of course, was the scene for this. When this new project that we just heard about a few minutes ago was birthed, that raised a big question. What's going to happen to the old jail? There was a big meeting in town. I remember going to it thinking, we can't tear down the jail. It's such great history. Alpha Niece was there, and she said, calm down, Bill. There's more than one way to commemorate things. And with her genius, she is helping along with a group of committee people to commemorate what happened in that jail, that first jail in of the Civil Rights Movement. Can you give us, I know everything isn't yet complete in your planning, but can you give us a sneak preview of what we might be able to expect with that jail in commemoration?
Well, some of the work has already been done, but, and I would just say with the jail, it had gone through several attempts to have it declared historic or national register, but it didn't pass because there had been additions, two or three additions to it. But the developer is including a plaza, a public plaza. The Florida Department of State already curated the entire civil rights history of the state of Florida. That's together. So I'm proposing through the historical group that that be a part of the plaza area that's going to be within the development cascade expansion. And we will also lift some of the history from the sidewalk because I kind of never really felt too comfortable with people walking on it, you know what I'm saying? So we're going to take it up so folk can, you know, just do that, see it on the plaza.
Well, I can't wait to see it, and I'm glad to see Patricia Stevens finally get her due as part of this. All right, last slide that we've got here is one that actually relates to something for you to keep on your on the lookout for, because sometime in the coming year, the Village Square plans to do something that I think you will really enjoy. There are two seminal works that have influenced various groups around the country who look at the future of different communities. This one on your left, The Rise of the Creative Class, is a must-read for every KCCI member, written by Richard Florida, and it looks at creative capital and how various cities rank and why it's important to attract creative people to your city. The good news here is that Tallahassee has consistently ranked among the best cities in the entire Southeast on all of the various rankings that Richard Florida does related to creative class, and that is something that I think that we as a city can use to attract additional talent to our community. What's interesting is that while there's this conversation taking place about creative class, there's also a conversation that's been taking place now for a couple decades, really, that grows out of some work by Robert Putnam at Harvard and his famous book, Bowling Alone, where he looks at the decline in civic engagement around the country and the decline in social capital. And what's interesting here is that, lo and behold, Tallahassee ranks rather high when it comes to social capital. But because of this hometown connectedness, the fact that we have groups like the Village Square and any of the number of other sponsors that are taking part in our event tonight and regularly get together in various civic activities to improve and better our community, we rank high in that area as well, which means that Tallahassee is in a really rather unique place, where we can offer both urban creativity and small town connectedness. I think this is something that we should crow more about, and we'll have a session next year as part of our Village Square series of some kind. We will devote an entire forum to exploration of these questions, and I would encourage you to be on the lookout for that, in addition to taking part in the Emancipation Day celebration and looking out for that plaza and coming and taking part in some of these film discussions and longest table discussions. I can imagine that for many of you, these kinds of conversations might sound intimidating, but remember, it's the Village Square. We always have food. We always make it fun. We find a way to talk about all the things that our mothers told us to never talk about: politics, religion, and now, lo and behold, race. Thank you very much for your time and attention. We'll now go back to our regular programming.
Thank you, guys. Now we're back. We're picking up the pace again, and I'm going to ask one of the guys helping design and guide our business community, Jay Rebel from the Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce, who's going to talk to us about some of the talent that exists in this community with a special presentation. Jay?
Good evening, everyone. Everyone hear me okay? I think I have the duty of being the shortest speaker tonight, so very happy about that. Really quickly, you heard earlier some mention that when we see our call letters for our city, TLH, we like to think of that in a slightly different way. We like to think that that stands for Talent Lives Here. And the really fun thing about this concept is that that has such a wide variety of applications. Every one of you in this room tonight has something that you're uniquely talented at in your life. You have skills, you have talents, you have abilities that all come together to make our community a really special place to live. And that's my cue to shut up, I think. These are the video series that we're working on right now. Thank you very much for the hook. If you get a chance, check these out. They're on our Facebook page. They're on our YouTube channel for the Tallahassee Chamber of Commerce. When you get a chance, find these stories about people that you know who are talented. Tell those stories, and when you do, use the hashtag TalentLivesHere to tell unique stories about people who live here in our community. We're doing that right now with, in particular, young professionals who have chose to live and make their life and career in Tallahassee. So we got some videos. We'll show you a couple tonight. Thank you.
Hey everybody, my name is Chirag Shah, founder and storyteller of Current Agency. I challenged myself as I graduated from Florida State to take a year and see what opportunities are here in Tallahassee. I put myself out there, built a lot of relationships, and I fell in love with Tallahassee right away. And kind of how I explain Tallahassee to others is it's not a small town, it's not a big city, but the beauty about it is you see it grow more and more each day. I think there's two empowering qualities that Tallahassee has to offer. We have a support system. Support system in the sense of there's a lot of major universities here that will always have your back. The Chamber, all the different statewide organizations, being the capital city. And then growth opportunities. Every business that I've come in contact with has opportunities for now, but for also for the future. I started Current March 18, 2014. It's been challenging. I've learned so much more than what I've learned in corporate America. So today I'm learning marketing. Today I'm learning how to pay taxes for a business. It's always something different every day. It gives me the opportunity to always be on my toes and welcome opportunities when they come.
Thanks, Jay. we'll have another one of those in just a little bit. We've only got about six presentations left. There's a new conversation taking place about another part of the workforce, a healthy conversation that's making a huge difference in people's lives. And Ready for Work is where one of the places that's happening in our community, and Myla Kate Robinson is here.
Yay, hello, hi. Hey everybody, I am Myla Kate Robinson and I am the career development instructor for Ready for Work Tallahassee. And I'm going to walk you through our program and what it is and exactly what we do and why we're so influential and important to this community. So, who are we? The Ready for Work program was developed by Operation New Hope in Jacksonville, Florida about 20 years ago, right? The purpose of this program is to help reintegrate ex-offenders back into the community, because once they're released, what are they released to? No homes, no food, no social security card, clothes, nothing. So what happened in 2016, Bethel Empowerment Foundation founded Ready for Work Tallahassee. Okay, so why are we here? To provide hope and direction to ex-offenders, to train and lead our clients to live more productive lives, to improve public safety and health, and to reduce the Big Bend recidivism rate. Okay, I don't know if you guys know, but we're in the third year of having the highest rate for property crime. Yeah, and violent crime. Yeah, that's bad. Okay, so what do? We provide services from career development training to job coaching and employment services, transitional housing where it's completely free for them for up to 3 months. We provide daily lunches for them and so many other resources. So, the first portion of the program is career development. I'm their teacher, so I have a lot of energy. I'm flipping around the classroom all day. And I'm teaching them for 4 to 6 weeks different things with employability skills, life skills, and that's everything from anger management to self-esteem to time management to anything that their hearts desire that can help them reintegrate back into society. All right? Then, after they graduate from my portion, they move on to employment services. In employment services, we polish them up and we send them out for their interviews, okay? We use their knowledge, their skills, their abilities, their job interests, and any experience that they have to help prepare them for work, okay? Now, throughout that time that they're in our program for a full year. We have case management services. We pair each and every one of our clients with a case manager, and they develop a plan of care for them to determine their needs. They have one-on-one coaching, they are provided different services, and all of the above.
Probation and looking
for and they're given all of the services and the resources that they may need to become effective members of our community. All right, so now we're gonna watch a quick commercial.
Ready for Work can help. Everyone makes mistakes, but you shouldn't be defined by those mistakes. At Ready for Work Tallahassee, we offer hope for a better future for ex-offenders. For those truly ready for work, we provide employment assistance and comprehensive services guaranteed to help you get back on your
feet. On your feet. That was the last part of that. Yeah, help you get back on your feet. All right, so that video was just a snippet of what we do. We help take these individuals. That gentleman that was the main person in our commercial, he was incarcerated for over 30 years. Could you imagine going away for 30 years, leaving your home, and coming back to a community of nothing? Just leave you with that thought. Thank you.
A couple decades ago, we had a landfill that was a landfill. And there was a vision that took place at the county, and today what's happening out there is just remarkable, and it's just one of a couple really amazing products. Matt Caffell is here from the county along with Carrie Post, who's done an amazing job of telling the world who we are here. And you guys want to come up and tell us what's going on?
Thank you. Good evening. My name is Carrie Post. I'm the executive director of the Leon County Division of Tourism, also known as Visit Tallahassee. How many of y'all have heard about Appalachie Regional Park? Raise your hand. Pretty good. How about as a landfill, as slotted waste? How about as a national championship cross-country course? A few less hands. So very exciting. The county is embarking on a master plan for the facility. It's approximately 600 acres, ideally situated between upper and lower Lake Lafayette. Its key assets, a Greenway master plan, and it's currently in one of the blueprint projects. It's a very unique site, has interesting topography. There's a $17 million master plan that's in place. It's a strategic investment transitioning the solid waste management facility into a prominent regional park. The cross-country course at ARP has already gained national prominence. In 2009, the Appalachie Regional Park, I'm going to call it ARP, hosted the first cross-country championship event. 2013, as Gary mentioned, the county commission approved an investment of $250,000 to widen the course and provide enhancements in order to attract national championships event. The master plan for ARP includes numerous enhancements to the cross-country course, along with many unique nature-based amenities such as wildlife viewing platforms, canoeing and kayak launches, hiking and biking trails, another dog park, airfield, and two disc golf courses, one of them being national tournament grade. And the cross-country course is the western portion of the site. Starting in 2015, the landfill was closed for practical purposes, but the formal closure is slated for 2020. By the way, the cells on the landfills can make great parking lots for cross-country events. They can hold 3,500 cars. But this is all going to be closed. Like I said, they have stopped the landfill. It'll be permanently closed by 2020. Since 2009, we've hosted 21 cross-country events at ARP that have generated more than $28 million in direct spending. That's 21 events generating $28 million. In 2016, the Florida Sports Foundation selected Appalachian Regional Park as the Florida Sports Venue of the Year. Tallahassee is indeed a running community, and community partnerships have been and continue to be the key to success at the ARP cross-country course. With FSU Track and Field, head coach Bob Brayman, Golfwinds Track Club, Leon County, Parks and Rec have all been visionary partners from the very beginning. It's imperative to continue to strategically invest in the infrastructure at ARP on the cross-country course. We have secured more than 12 national, state, regional, and national championships at ARP over the next 3 years. And in 2021, we will be hosting the NCAA Cross-Country National Championships here, and we are also bidding to host about 10 more events. So this cross-country course is our Augusta, and our objective is to make Appalachian Regional Park be the cross-country course of choice for all national championships. Thank you.
I'll throw a little bit of a curveball here as well. So obviously, Gary was like, everybody's going to be pretty jazzed up after Carrie's presentation. So how are you going to bring it down a notch? I'm going to talk about hurricanes a little bit and the upcoming 2018 season. So as some of you may know, Leon County had been just recently designated a hurricane strong community. And that's a credit to everyone that's here in this room, in addition to the public safety and first responders that we have in our community. And this is a little bit about us building community resilience. And when we say that, everybody just kind of blanks over a little bit. And I want to explain a little bit what disaster resilience is and why that's important. And I want to do that with a story that starts with Saturday morning cartoons. So I grew up in the 80s, and I would have all my friends wake up in the morning on Saturday and watch cartoons. My Saturdays started a little bit differently. I would roll out of bed at about 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'd join my dad as we went out to an empty parking lot and picked up newspapers. And we would deliver those newspapers in rural Virginia down some pretty dark and dangerous roads at about 2 in the morning. So if you've ever had to be out early in the morning at 2 a.m., you also know that a lot of other people who are out on that road, it's late for them, and they've been out at other places. So there was one time that I was in my car with my dad, and I was rolling up the newspapers, and we'd stick them in the newspaper boxes down these dark roads. And one time we saw a car coming right towards us down this road. And it was veering in our lane, back into his, back into our lane. So my dad did a few things, as any parent would do in that situation. He flashed his headlights, car didn't slow down. Honked his horn, car didn't slow down. And he slowed down himself. And then in typical parent fashion, I see all of you probably did this too, he stopped hard and he did this, right? Because this is going to save you. This is going to do it. We're about to get hit by a car head on. This is going to save you, kid. We'll be all right. So he did that. And we got hit. We didn't get hit head on. We couldn't move off the side of the road because of the ditches and things. He turned the car. We got hit on the side. And I'm fine. But I'm not fine because my dad honked his horn or he flashed his lights or he did this, no matter how miraculous that might have been. I'm here today because he buckled my safety belt 2 hours before we got started delivering papers. This isn't a safety belt commercial. What I'm here to say is resilience is the stuff you do before disaster strikes. Before this moment in our community happens, resilience is about building the stuff that you can do, your plans, check your insurance, all that. And hey, I see Skip's here, so there's a little bit of a plug for Tallahassee Democrat in that on June 3rd, we're distributing the Disaster Survival Guide. And because Skip's here, I'm going to say, buy a Tallahassee Democrat paper on June 3rd and pick up a free Disaster Survival Guide. If he wasn't here, I was going to say, you just come to a library and pick him up too, but for free. But please, take an opportunity, pick this up on Sunday, June 3rd. It is available at all county facilities, and this Disaster Survival Guide is distributed in partnership with American Red Cross and Big Bend 211. This is the stuff that makes our community work and why we're a hurricane-strong community, because of all the work in this room because you are all focused on building resilience, and because of county and city workers like these folks who clear those roads, operate the chainsaws, and restore that power at 2 a.m. in the morning. So please, let's all do our part, pick up this disaster survival guide, check your plans, and let's be ready for 2018. Thank you.
I'm sure Skip enjoyed the plug, and I think he probably got off on the whole newspaper delivery thing. All right, this is really cool. If you want to see what thoughtful, innovative, progressive development looks like, you're going to love this presentation. Paul Bradshaw is here with like one of the really coolest urban design things we've seen in a long, long time. Paul.
Thanks very much. Whether you know it or not, Tallahassee's in the import-export business. We tend to import students and we export talent. And the question is, if we're going to thrive in the 21st century, how can we keep that talent here and export the things that talent creates? And that's the purpose of the project I'm going to talk about tonight. Tallahassee needs a creative class. If you look around the country and you look at the cities that are thriving and dominating in the business arena, it's those that are attracting the creative class. Last year, Forbes magazine picked Portland, Oregon, which is so profoundly weird that it has its own TV show, Portlandia, that lampoons it, as the number one business city in America. Who are the creative class? Well, demographically, they probably aren't most of the people in the room. The creative class tends to be millennials born between 1980 and about 2000, and Generation Z born between 2001 and now. So the oldest millennial now is about 38 years old. What do they care about? All that stuff you care about, they don't care about that. What they care about is a walkable urban lifestyle. They don't want a house with a white picket fence. They care about the transformative power of technology and Wi-Fi. There's actually a poll that shows that 40% of millennials care more about fast Wi-Fi than a functioning toilet. They care about the environment. Here are some politicians debating climate change. But there is no debate among millennials and Generation Z about climate change. That's actually some street art in Berlin. That's pretty cool. They care a lot about the environment. 25% of millennials believe that the greatest existential threat to mankind is climate change. Why does the creative class leave Tallahassee? It may be for the simple reason that we haven't created an environment, a built environment that's aligned with their values. And we have lost some opportunities. One of the few self-made billionaire women in America, Sarah Blakely, went to FSU, but she started her business in Atlanta. And so what we're doing is trying to address that through a project called the Freight Yard. To get you on the ground, there's West Gaines Street, there's Railroad Avenue, the Freight Yard, Merv's is above it, buy those cheese melts. GVO, which is a bar, is above that. To the east, you have state government. To the west, you have College Town, Domi Station. This is phase one of the Freight Yard. It's 12 luxury loft units, about 800 square feet, relying extensively on recycled materials for construction. For example, the countertops in the Freight Yard are made out of crushed beer bottles, not self-generated, but ones we actually go buy somewhere else. The bottom is a place for street art. Here's the floor plan for one of those luxury lofts. It has a balcony large enough for people to actually sit on. It's got a full living room with a flat screen TV, a full kitchen, a full bedroom, another flat screen TV, a walk-in closet, a full bath, a washer dryer. There are 12 of those in the first phase. Those should be built by December of this year, again on Railroad Avenue. This is potentially the most radical part of the Freight Yard. These are micro units built out of 20-foot containers. So they check the list for millennials and Generation Zs who are interested in a creative lifestyle. They're powered by photovoltaics. We're calling these the net zero units because they have a net zero carbon footprint. The back of those units actually forms a courtyard. So when you go outside your unit, if you want to hang out with your friends, if you want to use Wi-Fi, if you want to buy local food and drink, if you want to listen to a band, there's going to be a climbing wall there. It's a great place to hang out with your friends, your dogs, to people watch, to eat, to sort of experience the best of Tallahassee down in the All Saints area. This is the existing cinder block buildings there. Bread and Roses Kitchen was there. And we're going to renovate that. We're going to keep the buildings in place. We think that's a smart way to do adaptive reuse. But elevate the facades, create a new entryway that creates an alley that goes into the courtyard. And that will be a place for local business to grow and thrive. We think it checks the list for creatives to come and stay in Tallahassee. It's urban, it's walkable, it's affordable, it's artistic, it's environmentally appropriate, it's ultra green. We think if we do that, we have the chance to create this fertile ground where the roots of that creative class can grab hold and grow, and with any luck, we can keep those people around to transform Tallahassee in this century. Thank you.
Pretty cool. This is a perfect segue. Christian Doolin, Kathleen Brownlee, and our state representative, Loran Osley, are going to be talking about Purpose Built, which is really the next step in some of the things you've been seeing here. So, guys, I'll give it to you. Come on up.
All right. Show of hands, how many people recognize where this is in Tallahassee? Okay. If you didn't, you're probably in good company. A lot of the residents of Orange Avenue apartment complex, of generational residents, have felt forgotten as rest of the other neighborhoods in the community have flourished. So the city a while back started working with the Tallahassee Housing Authority to find out what kind of opportunities and development could be brought to this neighborhood. Now, providing public services has its challenges, as we're all aware. If you think of the last time you engaged a local government for something, what that experience was like. Among them, it could be transactional, issue-focused. And what we're here to talk about today is expanding that from transaction to impact and broadening what providing affordable housing might look like to transforming someone's life. With that, I'll turn it over to Kathleen.
Hey, I'm Kathleen Brownlee. I'm with Purpose Built Communities out of Atlanta, and wow, Tallahassee. I mean, I didn't know all the stuff that was going on here, so I've learned a lot. So we are a nonprofit consulting group that is helping communities create, revitalize disinvested communities. But let's ground ourselves for just a minute. We're 50 years into the war on poverty, and we still have rampant poverty out there. And we actually have 1 out of 4 children living in poverty, and 50% of those live in concentrated poverty. That's toxic stress environments that impact their lives forever. And one of the focuses that we're really looking at Purpose Built is the impact on health. 60% of premature deaths have nothing to do with your genes or what your parents gave to you. It's where you live and your behavior. So if those statistics don't get you or make you move and want to do something about this, this next one should. We in America spend $500 billion a year, year in and year out, due to the effects of childhood poverty. $500 that is coming out of your and my pockets when we pay taxes. And what if you could take a little bit of this and try to revitalize a community? So our founder, Tom Cousin, actually tried to do that in Eastlake. He was introduced to this community in the mid-90s. Think of every ill you can imagine. It was happening here. You were guaranteed to be a victim of a felony if you lived in Eastlake. And because of the school that was serving your kids there, they weren't likely to ever get out of there. So we're going to fast forward, and he implemented this model, and this is where we are today. It is now one of the safest communities. We went from the worst schools to now having 3 of the highest performing schools. We had 100% graduation rate last year. Home values are up, and private investment has come in. So Purpose Built was founded to see if we could, and we know we're replicating this. It's a deep dive in a neighborhood, doing mixed income housing, cradle to college, and community investments. But the secret sauce is a community quarterback that sole purpose is to make sure these are working collaboratively together to make sure the whole ship rises. So in 9 years, to show that this is replicable, we have 18 communities. They're implementing this model. At any given time, we're talking to 40 or 50 others. We've been in Tallahassee now for about a year. seeing that this is potentially a model for here. And before I turn it over to Representative Osley, just want to show you a few of the stats that our network members are doing. We're serving over 21,000 students, 2,400 new homes. These are healthy or becoming healthy communities with grocery stores, community gardens, and community centers. So I'm going to turn it over to Lorraine to tell you a little bit about Tallahassee.
Thank you. So you can understand why I am very excited about the possibility of bringing Purpose Built to Tallahassee. So how did we get here? Thanks to some heavy lifting from the city, the county, and the Tallahassee Housing Authority, Columbia Residential has been selected as the developer to replace 120 public housing units right off of Orange Avenue. Now, Columbia has worked very successfully with Purpose Built in a number of communities, and it is our hope and our job to convince Purpose Built to bring their model here to Tallahassee. So you saw the little chart of the Purpose Built model. We start with a defined neighborhood. In a minute, I'm going to show you that defined neighborhood. I'm ahead of my slides. Bottom line, we're looking at the promise zone when we get there. This is the promise zone. And what we're looking at is the bottom two, the southeast corner here, South City and Appalachia Ridge. South City is one of our most challenged neighborhoods with statistics that are even more staggering than those in the entire promise zone. In South City, the poverty rate is 59%, very high teen birth rate, unemployment, and crime rate. So the first pillar of Purpose Built is mixed income housing. And this is a rendering that Columbia has done after about a year of citizens' input. And let me tell you where this is. If you're at the Capitol and go south and take a left on Orange Avenue, South City is the neighborhood to your north, and Appalachia Ridge is the neighborhood to your south. Second component is Cradle to College Pipeline. Whole Child Leon has been leading an effort to establish an early learning center at the former Wesson School, and we're ongoing conversations with superintendent and school board about a plan for all the schools that serve South City, and Purpose Built is walking us through those conversations. All of these are a two-gen approach dealing with parents and with kids and their parents. The third piece is wellness. Southside Tallahassee has an abundance of health resources. If you think about Bond, Neighborhood, CarePoint, the Rickards Clinic, but many residents do not have a medical home. Through this effort, we're going to help to better utilize the existing resources and bring in amenities to vastly improve the quality of life for all residents. Bottom line, the housing is going to happen. It's already underway. Purpose Built gives us the opportunity to take something good and make it great. So I hope that you, after seeing this, are as excited as I am. We're just starting these conversations. Stay tuned and see us about how you want to plug yourself in. Thanks.
And don't hurt yourself again. If you don't know Tempo, you should. And Dr. Kimball Thomas is here to tell us about it. Doc?
I am here to talk about Tempo, the Tempo that you don't know. Now, the Tempo that you do know is things like, I've got sunshine, ooh, come on, on a cloudy day, ooh, and when it's cold outside, I've got the month of May. Pick it up, come on, put your hands together. I guess you say, what can make me feel this way? Talking about my girl.
Now that's the tempo. That's the tempo that you know. Here's a tempo you don't know. Here are opportunity youth that look like this all over the streets of Tallahassee, ages 16 to 24, who may not be in school, and have dropped out and don't have jobs.
And they look like someone's nephew. They look like someone's cousin. They look like someone's brother. Tempo is Tallahassee engaged in meaningful productivity for opportunity youth. Where are they? You just saw a promise zone map. Those are some of the census tracts all over Tallahassee. You saw census tract 10.01, South City. Census tract 0.2, McLean area, Appalachia Ridge. They are all over our city. They're walking the streets. So far, we've talked to 200 young people, one-on-one. How could one person engage with 200 young people? My grandmother, who never had beyond a fifth grade education, taught me something. She said, boy, when you get your PhD, I didn't even know what it was at that time. She said, one thing you better have is personality. She learned to have conversation. Conversation is when you talk to and with people. Confrontation is when you talk at people. We have over 200. How can you help us sponsor disconnected youth with a GED, apprenticeship, or vocational scholarship? Where do we have them? They're going to adult and community ed. They're going to Career Source and getting job experiences. We're enrolling them at Lively so they can get a seamless transition from getting off the street, getting a GED, and getting a job. Who's listening to that beat? Oh, you really caught that My Girl beat, didn't you? So who's listening to this beat of Tallahassee engaged in meaningful productivity for opportunity youth? Who's really listening to those opportunity youth when they have their pants somewhere or their hat not in the right place that you pass them by and you think they're a problem? We ask that you look at them as an opportunity. So who's looking, listening to the beat? We hope all of Tallahassee will, from north and east and south and west. We hope all of you will be engaged in helping pick up opportunity youth and giving them opportunity. So I want you to pick up the tempo. Make sure if you know someone from 16 to 24 years old who are not in school and not working, have them call 891-8722. Now, meet a person of success. This is really going to be good.
Thanks to the City of Tallahassee, I'm in the Tempo program and taking GED classes to advance my career. So I need all of you to pick up the tempo.
As I close, if you like My Girl, go ahead and do Billie Jean, Michael Jackson. No, I'm kidding.
Okay. We love people who love what they do. His passion for that program is amazing. We have three more presenters. One more quick video of another one of the amazing talent that exists in our community today from the Chamber.
My name is Russ Browning. I am a commercial risk manager. I do business insurance here in town for Rogers Gunner Vaughn Insurance. We are now Hub International. We just recently were acquired by Hub.
My name is Megan Browning, and I am the wife of Russ Browning. I work at Cotton Colors here in Tallahassee. I'm the marketing associate for the Happy Everything collection.
When we came to Tallahassee, I had never been here, neither had she, until the day of my interview. Immediately, we fell in love with Tallahassee and the opportunities and the options that we could have here.
I had been a huge fan of Cotton Colors ever since we lived in Georgia, and realizing that Cotton Colors was actually a Tallahassee-based company was something so special and unique because I realized that I was able to get a career and grow a career right here in my own community. And not only was it a locally owned business, but it was also a national and an international business.
So I worked in three other cities before Tallahassee, and nowhere was this focused around community and networking as Tallahassee is. And I think that's part of the allure to Tallahassee, is that that's what makes it feel like a small town, is everybody knows everybody.
We have talked about, is Tallahassee where we want to be for the next 10 years, the next 15 years, the next 30 years? And the answer is always yes. You know, we see our careers growing. We see our friend base growing. We see everything that this community has to offer only getting better and gaining more traction.
When we came here with a mindset to plant roots, and we did. And they've really taken a big hold to the point of now I don't think we can leave, even if we wanted to. Between the friends and the groups that we've met through our church or through professional organizations or Ducks Unlimited or Junior League or no matter what it is, we've just gotten so well plugged in and we're growing so well here that we've kind of punched our ticket to stay.
Hey, thanks, Jay, for bringing those. there's a lot of cool people in town who are finding this as home. And it says a lot about the kind of things we're offering as a community. We bike. We're biking more than we ever have. I mean, and some of the things that the city's doing to kind of move that along is pretty cool stuff. Julie Christensen's here to kind of share with that.
Hi, everyone. I'm Julie Con Christensen, AICP certified planner with the City of Tallahassee Leon County Planning Department. And I want to tell you guys about some of the initiatives that we have going on, some of our infrastructure investments, and some of the resources that we have in case you want to get out and see the community on two wheels. One of the newest things is Pace Bike Share. I just missed my slide, but they have done 10,000 rides in the last 4 months or so. They launched December 2017, and you can pick up a Pace Bike anywhere. You can pick it up from their station and drop it off at a city rack, which brings me into our city rack program here. When we first put together our bike route network, what we heard was that, that's great, thanks so much, you guys, but you don't give us anywhere to park. So we purchased some bike racks, and now if you see any gaps in our bike route network where you want to park your bike and you can't, just let us know and we can get that going for you. This is our protected bike lane network. It's downtown. It kind of flanks the Civic Center. We have a little over a mile done so far. The rest of it's striped out. It's buffered bike lanes. They asked me to talk a little bit about the trolley. My slide's a little wrong. Lunch trolley is not back. It is on vacation for the summer. But you can pick up the trolley on Friday and Saturday nights from 4:30 p.m. to 1 a.m. There is a real-time map online, so you can check it out there. It's free. You can ride it to all the different locations there. Does this look familiar to anyone? Is anybody from Tallahassee? So this is Franklin Boulevard back when it used to flood all the time. Basically, it was not a good street for anyone, not great for cyclists, not great for pedestrians, not great for cars, and not great when it rained. So what we did is we took this street and the flooding issues, and we kind of updated it to this street. So this should look familiar now to everyone. As you can see, we've done a lot of multimodal improvements. We have a multi-use path, bike lanes, enhanced crosswalks. We have landscape medians. This is a street that people can use. Sometimes we call it a complete street. And it's really cool because it doesn't flood anymore, and it leads you directly into one of our regional stormwater facilities. So I'm going to kind of take you on a trip through Cascades to the Capitol Cascades Bridge. This is a bike and pedestrian bridge. It was created to look like a tree canopy, which is cool. It has nanotechnology in the concrete, and it counts cyclists and pedestrians as they go over the bridge. So to date, in 2018, there's been 16,000 cyclists that have crossed over this bridge. Once you get over the bridge, you come out onto FAMU Way and the Capitol Cascades Trail, and this is a really cool street. I don't know how many of you guys have had a chance to go down it yet, but it has a multi-use path, has bike lanes on a lot of it, and it has roundabouts, which are really cool because when hurricanes come and if we lose our power, the traffic will still flow. So those are really neat. And what I like about it is that it's adding to our connectivity. So you can see the St. Mark's Trail here. It's going to connect to the Gamble Street roundabout. So soon you'll be able to go from Leon High School, down Franklin Boulevard, over the Cascades Park Bridge, down FAMU Way, all the way to St. Mark's. But wait, there's more. when it's done, you'll be able to go all the way down to Masha Sands on the Capital City to the Sea Trail, which is going to be really great. So this kind of has the construction schedule. I think it's done up to Wakulla High School. So if anybody has tried it out so far, you should be able to ride down there. And we think that's going to be a really great regional connector. I also wanted to give you guys a couple resources in case you're new to cycling or in case you just kind of want to figure out a route to get where you want to go. This is biketallahassee.com. You can find any of our bike route networks. You can find all of our facilities, the protected bike lane network that I talked about a couple seconds ago, the bike parking, also the Pace bike racks. And just check it out. It'll help you get around, tell you how to register your bike and what to do if it's stolen, all those good things. The last slide is trailahassee.com. You can pick your surface, your skill level, and your activities. This is actually maintained by Visit Tallahassee. Once you put all of your parameters in, it will populate, and then you can pick from any of the trails that fit what you're looking for. And you click on them, and they will give you more information. So that was my little teaser. 20 seconds goes a lot faster than you think it will. Thank you, guys.
I personal testimony, the site is great. If you bike, it really can lay out the path and you'll find places you hadn't thought of before. I know you're coming, man. Jim Bellamy has done some remarkable things in Frenchtown. Lauren Chapel Harris, Lauren? Oh, she's not here. That's okay. You've never had trouble carrying stuff by yourself. Kitchen Share is one of the coolest projects in the country. What they're doing is remarkable, and you're going to enjoy hearing about this.
Good evening. You know, you want to know what's cooking in Frenchtown. A lot of things. Y'all just don't know about it, I guess. We have what we call the Heritage Hub. We have a food hub in Frenchtown now. There are only two food hubs in the state of Florida. One is in Frenchtown and the other one is in St. Pete. So we have an opportunity here to really do some things with the food hub. As a matter of fact, we're talking about Kitchen Share. With Kitchen Share, what we're going to do is that we're going to have a commercial kitchen that will be available to the food entrepreneurs around the city and a region. They can rent it by the hour, by the day, by the minute, by whenever. It doesn't matter. We have commercial food equipment already in the place. We got a grant from the Department of Agriculture for $500,000, which allowed us to get the equipment, but we didn't have money to buy to do the improvements, to do construction. The city gave us $250,000 to do the construction, and we also got $40-some thousand from the Knight Foundation. But this is really an opportunity. Right now, I'm real excited about it. It got to the point where when you walk in now and you see all the equipment in there, it really looks different. We have a business incubator class that started on Tuesday. This is our second cohort. The first cohort, we had 8 people to graduate, and we had people that some of them have already opened their businesses. One that we have now have 10 people in that class this year. We're really excited about what's going on. It provides a very new concept for people to build their businesses. We started out making what we thought was a market, and we still have the market. Within the next year, the Kitchen Share should be able to fund itself and also take care of the market. So we're really excited about it. We got a walk-in freezer, we have a hotline, we have a bakery, we have what we call the wet room, we have a specialty room, we have a packaging room. We'll be able to package our own products and things of that nature. So it's really exciting about what's going on there, and we invite you to come down sometime and check us out. We're shooting for June to have our grand opening. We're really excited about it. Already, I can't get chefs when they come in. I can't get them out the building because they get so excited about what's going on in there and the equipment that we have there. Most people can't afford the kind of equipment that we have, so a lot of them come in and say, well, this is what I've been wanting and what I need. Now you see the various doors. We didn't show you all the equipment and stuff because we figured you couldn't see it yet. But anyway, those are the various rooms that we have there. And sometime in June, hopefully, we'll be able to open up and get started. But come on down to the Frenchtown Market, which we have every Saturday from 10 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon. Thank you very much.
I mean, young entrepreneurs who think they have something to offer in the culinary, in that entire arena, have a place now. I mean, it's just the coolest thing to go and have the type of equipment that allows them to really talk to the food universe and get a chance, definitely head down there and do it. We're kind of staying on the theme here. Rebecca Kelly, thank you for being up here. Rebecca Kelly Manders is going to tell you about Refile Culinary. She is the founder, and it's a pretty cool program.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Rebecca Kelly Manders, and I am the, as I like to say, the chef instructor, founder, and head dishwasher of the Refire Culinary Training Program. Refire was a concept that I began thinking about in 2015. I also own a food truck called Street Chefs, and we're having a hard time finding people to work for us. I'm also a convicted felon, and so I know how hard it is to get a job. In the kitchen, when you have to refire a dish, it means you have to correct a mistake. And you have to do it fast, and you have to do it well. What Refire is trying to do is give people who are formerly incarcerated the opportunity to refire their lives. We provide them tuition-free, 8 weeks of instruction. We bring them into the Hope Community Kitchen. We allow them to experience what it's like to work in a kitchen and give them that sense of empowerment, and we allow them to affect a positive change in their lives. Let's talk about recidivism for a minute. Recidivism in our country is astonishingly high. 3 out of every 4 individuals that come out of our prison system on the national level will go back within 5 years. The number one reason they go back is because they cannot find suitable and sustainable employment, and that is something that we can change. What we do in our community, and this is the only program that is like this in the state of Florida, but not in our country. We're modeled after other successful programs around the nation. But what we do is give these individuals that smile right there. We're putting people out who not only need a job, but they absolutely want a job. These are individuals who have made a decision to make a conscious effort in their lives to walk away from the mistakes that got them in trouble in the first place and come back to our communities and become productive members of our society again. In the course of 1 year, in just Leon County alone, we'll have over 1,000 individuals returning to our communities from our state penitentiaries and our federal prisons. Just a little glimpse. It's always fun to watch people cut peppers. So this is actually in our second class. Just a little glimpse of what we do over the course of the 8 weeks. We focus on 4 major areas. We focus on kitchen roles and communication, how to walk, talk, think, be in a kitchen. We focus on basic knife skills. We focus on reading and following recipes. And finally, we have our largest focus is on food safety and sanitation because it's just food. You know, it can only kill you. We give all of our students the opportunity to take the nationally recognized ServSafe examination, which is a 5-year managerial level certification. These gentlemen are currently in our class. They'll be graduating next Wednesday at our fundraiser. All 3 passed this examination on their first try. 2 of them scoring in the 85th percentile. It is not an easy test to master. The other side of what we do is we help feed the over 200 residents of the Big Bend Homeless Coalition Hope Community. This is an emergency homeless shelter for women and children. We feed, on average, about 60 children under the age of 6 every single day and about 110 children under the age of 17. So we try and provide nutritionally sound meals for them. Anyone who has a felony conviction is welcome to apply. The only convictions we can't accept are sexual in nature because of the population that we serve. We receive a lot of referrals from Ready for Work, so thank you for that, for Ready for Work. Some people have culinary experience. Some people don't have a whole lot, like Mr. Bradford here. But if we are going to allow these individuals the opportunity to truly refire their lives, to truly come back into our communities, to truly come back and be a part of our society, we must make the decision to let them show us that they are not the mistakes that they made, but their lives can turn what the mistakes happened to them into a positive force for our communities. It's not only good for the individuals, it's not only good for us as taxpayers, but it's good for us as human beings as a whole. So that's just a little glimpse about the ReFire Culinary Program. Thank you very much.
So tonight we found cool things happening with people. People getting ready to live in giant cargo containers off shipping, amazing new bike paths, new communities that are transforming. It's a pretty cool place we live in. I wrote a column not too long ago about when we went from a town to a city. Was it a moment? Was it one thing? Was it the transformation of a lot of different things? I think we act like a town, but I think we're a city. And I think that's pretty cool when that combination works. Just a moment about the Village Square. Everybody's in this room today because the Village Square exists. Whatever you can do to help the Village Square move the amazing community conversations that they make happen forward, please, don't donate to the Village Square. Invest in the Village Square because that's what those folks are about, and they do a remarkable job just putting not only these things but important conversations over the course of this year and every other year. We would have a question answer period. We're not going to do it tonight. We've asked the presenters if they would hang around for a little while in case you guys just want to mingle and chat with them about something you may have heard. We think that's kind of an important thing to do. Thanks so much to our sponsors for helping make this happen. And thank you guys for taking the time to come on out and share this with us. Good night.
And let's hear it for Gary Yordan. Thank you so much.